This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us. Welcome to episode 114 of TPF Live. I'm Rob Tiansen, joined alongside Brooklyn Jackson for the post-Talladega pre-Dover edition of our show. There's a lot to get to on this show as we're reaching the second quarter of the NASCAR Cup Series season. And that means that we already know who the contenders and the pretenders are in the NASCAR Cup Series, as well as the NASCAR Xfinity Series. But we're not going to diss on the pretenders, and we're not exactly going to give too much praises to the contenders, because anything can and will happen in the world of NASCAR Cup Series racing. But there's a lot to get to, because on this edition of our show, we'll have Haley Deegan joining us on this program. Of course, she's the driver of the number 15 Airbox Ford Mustang Dark Horse entry, fielded by AM Racing, a little team founded by an Austinite. Imagine that. Little connection for the show, based out of Austin, Texas. But Haley is not obviously from Texas, but you'll get to know her because it's our very first time talking to her in the entire inception of TPF. So it'll be a really cool interview. It was done literally just before she got into her race car at COTA last month. So if she is a little bit high-wired, that's Haley, but in the good way high-wired. So lots of adrenaline on the show. But before we get started, let's go bring in Brooklyn, who is getting settled in her new studio, if you will, new studio space here. So how are you doing, Brooklyn? And we're almost here at Dover Race Weekend.
I'm good. Talladega is behind us. We can sleep a little easier, maybe, potentially. I don't know. I'm ready to get onto Dover and talk about all things Talladega.
Talladega is certainly right behind us. There was a lot of messiness that happened on both days, and I'm sure the fab shop for the Xfinity teams are still busy trying to repair their damaged machines. And in the Cup Series, I'm sure they're taking out those components and trying to get them all sorted out for the next super speedway race for the Cup Series, which won't be until July at Atlanta. Weird to say Atlanta is a super speedway, but I'm still getting used to it, kids. But yeah, there's a lot to look back on, but of course we would be remiss if we don't say get well Eric Jones. Of course, he's the normal primary driver of the number 43 Legacy Motor Club Toyota Camry XSE. Unfortunately, he got injured late on Sunday's race. He suffered a lower vertebrae fracture. So for those of you who have loved ones with back problems or have been through a back problem yourself, you can empathize heavily how Eric is doing. And he'll be meeting with the press this weekend to talk more about it alongside the interim driver, Corey Heim, who of course was a Championship Four driver in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series and the reserve driver for Legacy Motor Club. So best wishes to Eric. We hope to see him back soon and certainly hope to do some interviews with him down the road and talk about his latest comeback, if you will, because he's certainly a tough kid from Byron, Michigan. Now, before we get into the Podium Perspective segment, let's go hear from our presenting sponsor, SpoilerDiecast.com. Hey there, racing fans. Are you on the lookout for the latest NASCAR, IndyCar, or F1 diecasts in the market? Well, look no further than SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest and fastest shipping in the industry. And did you know, if you use code TPF on orders of $20 or more, you'll get free shipping and 5% off of your orders. And that's really easy money to save. So head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com and use code TPF to get 5% off of your orders of $20 or more. And if you happen to be in the area in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Spoiler Diecast is now open for business at their storefront location at 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E, Fort Wayne, Indiana. SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest in diecast collectibles. We'll see you in the fast lane. Yes, indeed, folks. Use that promo code TPF. Get yourself free shipping and 5% off your orders of $20 or more. There's plenty of diecast coming from China to America for NASCAR and IndyCar, because after this week, we are in the month of May. And I know you guys are thinking Justin Timberlake memes. In the world of racing, I'm not thinking about Justin Timberlake. I'm thinking about Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So you know that means Greenlight Collectibles are on their way with getting 2024 NTT IndyCar Series diecast cars. In fact, I have a Kyle Larson IndyCar in my office that I'm really looking forward to displaying for future segments that I'll do when I do like my post-race Rob thoughts and much more for in-home content. So should be a lot of fun. I can't wait for all the racing action. But for right now, why don't we talk about the racing action on Podium Perspectives, which is always sponsored by SpoilerDiecast.com. Now, on Sunday afternoon, I don't think anybody was totally surprised as to who won the race. Unusual because for the Cup Series at Talladega, it tends to favor the dark horses. And to label Tyler Reddick a dark horse is frankly insulting because he's been on the precipice of winning races. I don't mean just one race. I mean, the kid from Corning, California has been on an impressive streak. I think he's been on a four-race consecutive top 10 streak since he finished fifth at COTA not long ago. And that's not counting Sunday's race. Now, on Sunday, he kind of bided his time. He didn't really flex his muscle in his number 45 Jordan Brand Toyota Camry XSE. He finished ninth in stage one, which was won by Austin Cindric. And then in stage two, Joey Logano and the Fords, they looked like they were ready to rumble. But Reddick was right there. He finished sixth. When it came down to the last laps of the race, Reddick was pretty much holding his own on the outside line while Michael McDowell and all the Fords are on the inside line ganging up on that Toyota. And they're like, we're going to beat you with our Ford Mustang Dark Horse, you hammerheads. But as they got to the stripe on the final lap, that was not how it worked out. If you had flashbacks to Tony Stewart and Kyle Busch's incident in the 2009 Coke Zero Sugar 400 at Daytona, well, yeah, that's pretty much what happened. A really bad block happened, but unlike Tony Stewart, when he kind of chopped Kyle Busch off and Kyle ended up wrecking and Tony won the race, Brad, being in the role of Tony, didn't win. Reddick was able to sneak on through by inches and beat Keselowski to the stripe by 0.202 seconds, which in Talladega standards, that's a lot. That's a huge margin of victory. But Brooklyn, I know that Tyler Reddick made like MJ. He just did it, or, you know, just do it. But that's improper English for me to say it that way. So he just did it like Air Jordan. But what are your thoughts on his victory on Sunday?
I wasn't that surprised. He's someone who we're used to seeing him, I mean, in the top 10, I mean, winning races. So I don't think he's a name you're surprised to see in victory lane. I think more so what I was surprised by was the actual finish, the actual like last lap. In the manner he won, I mean, with the block and then, you know, he's just there. I mean, like you said, he was just there at the right time, which is how Talladega happens. I mean, pretty much for the most part, you just have to luck into quite a bit of it.
And he said on Sunday that he got a lot of help from his Toyota teammates. So I didn't want to make it seem like Tyler was just like, I had all the power and I lucked through. He had a lot of help from from Ty Gibbs and Martin Truex Jr. And he did mention that right away. So he tipped his cap to those two. Unfortunately for Martin Truex Jr., he was one of those involved in that last lap accident, while Tyler Reddick was just like, it's my day in the sunshine. I got to win. And it's a pretty big victory because of the fact that Michael Jordan was there and he finally got to see his team win. Now, 2311 is no stranger to winning at Talladega because let's not forget, Bubba Wallace won a rain shortened Yellowwood 500 on October 4th, 2021. So again, not a total surprise that 2311 was up there, but I guess you could say it's a sort of surprise that, you know, I was going to think a Ford was going to win. And then Michael McDowell, I don't know what he was. I'm not trying to blame him, but I want to say it this way. I don't know what he was thinking trying to throw that block on Brad, because through all my years of watching NASCAR, and I am no NASCAR driver, so I don't want to sound like a talking head, But you always protect the inside line because the yellow line's your best friend with nobody able to go below the yellow line without getting penalized. So I'm kind of surprised that he threw that big block on Brad, knowing that Brad would have to have gone on the outside. And I don't see Tyler Reddick trying to help Brad to win the race. So do you think maybe Michael kind of jumped the gun and kind of, I don't want to say panic, but maybe just flinched at the wrong time?
I do. I mean, it's hard to say what happened, obviously, without, I mean, you know, hearing exactly what he was thinking and, I mean, being inside his head. But, I mean, that's what it felt like to me with my initial reaction and now having a few days to kind of sit on it. I feel like it was just a combination of maybe the, I mean, I don't want to call it the wrong reaction, but just like you said, jumping the gun. I mean, the wrong time to do that, basically, is what I guess I'm trying to say.
Yeah, because I was just like, you have the race won, and if you don't win, you're going to get a second or third. Not that every driver in the field's like, yippee, I can't wait to finish third. But Michael had the best car, in my opinion. He led seven times with 35 laps, or 36 mm-hmm. laps, rather. I don't think Brad was strong enough to go and beat him. He would have had to get a lot of help from Noah Gregson, as well as Todd Gilliland. And I don't think Todd's going to betray Michael at the end of that race. So it's one of those deals where I guess it's easy to be the Monday morning quarterback when you watch the replays. But certainly when I was watching the race unfold live, I was like, what are you doing? Why are you having to throw that big block? And I was just like, man, that's a shame he wrecked out like that. And all he netted from on Sunday was 6 points. And that's insulting because I felt like Michael had a better day than earning 6 points. I felt like he was worthy of the win. He should have had the 40 points and a seat in the playoffs. But instead, the Ford camp is bumming and the Toyota camp is like humming because Reddick's got himself a victory finally. And I don't think it's going to be the only time that Reddick will win a race. And for the second week in a row, Brad Keselowski finished second, and I'm sure at some point he's going to be thinking about trading his bridesmaid gown and finding the bride herself or himself in this case. But with Noah Gregson getting a third, the slow but steady ascent from the bottom of the barrel to getting to midfield in the point standings is becoming quite realistic for Noah to hopefully be a contender for the number 10 team. But as it is, Sunday's race on Jeff Gluck's poll did not really do that well. But if I tell you that there were 72 lead changes among 23 different drivers, that doesn't sound like a race that should have had a low rating. It only got like about 52, 53%, which again, we talked about this last week. It kind of sucks that we have to gauge races off a poll. I know Jeff again is trying to do his job and there's no science behind the percentages, but personally for me, up until that last lap, I was like on the edge of my seat going, oh man, we didn't really have a lot of accidents except for the one on lap 157, which unfortunately we'll get to talking about in a bit here and putting perspectives. But otherwise, it was a pretty docile race, which I was okay with. Kind of could do without the wrecks, but it is what it is. And we're moving on to Dover, which we'll talk about also towards the end of the show with our predictions. Now, let's talk about the one thing I think you and I may have different opinions on, or might be in total agreement about, the fuel mileage aspect, which all of a sudden is a thing at super speedways. I can tell you, since watching NASCAR back in 1991, I don't recall seeing the packs slowing down deliberately. I don't recall the packs slowing down deliberately to try to save fuel to get to the certain point of a race. Instead, we typically have seen the drivers, you know, running on the high lane. I know that we call it choo-choo racing, but it's sort of a way to get to the end of a stage or get to the final laps, and then we duke it out, rather. And what's weird was Daytona, I felt like that was a one-time thing. I remember Elton Sawyer was like, oh, yeah, we'll look into it. We'll figure out what's going on. You know, 3 months later, we haven't quite figured it out because it turns out this is still a thing. We're still seeing the weird path. The pack's slowing down by 5 seconds, which is so odd to me. I almost feel like a team should just go take a chance and say, you know what? If you guys are going to play this way, we're going to get past you. We'll do more pit stops, but we'll smoke you guys on this silliness. I don't know if this rule is still in the rule book. I will have to look at some point. But I remember in 2013, NASCAR wanted the drivers to give it 100%. It was literally a rule instituted after the Spingate situation at Richmond Raceway. So, Brooklyn, I'm kind of curious to get your perspective. Is the fuel mileage situation on super speedways like Daytona, even Atlanta and now Talladega, is it absurd to you or do you find it interesting?
I do find it absurd. I mean, I'm not a fan of it personally. Like, I'm a fan of the more traditional super speedway racing, I guess you would say. I think I would feel comfortable saying most people are used to. Mostly because we've just kind of started seeing the shift. But I mean, it's interesting just because, I mean, it's so different and it makes you go, But yeah, I'm not a fan. Are you?
I hate it. I hate it to pieces because I don't want to see the field slowing down by 5 seconds. Like when we saw that at Daytona earlier this year, when Blaney was leading the field, I was just like, is something wrong with this car? But then when I saw everybody else around them doing the same thing, I was like, we're trying to save fuel. Interesting. Maybe this is only going to be a stage one thing. And then we really just do hard racing from there. And I kind of think that was the case because of the cautions falling where they did. But on Sunday, because we didn't have as many cautions, thankfully, I know we want to see the pit crews involved, we want to see strategies, but I don't exactly want to see people stroking to get to the finish of a stage or a race. I'm there to cover a race to see people go all full out. Like when I ran my 5K on Saturday, yeah, I did save a little bit of fuel, or in my case, some power. But that's because in my case, I'm trying to get into athletic shape, unlike the people around me or the 68 different people who finished ahead of me in the race. But towards the end of the race, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go full out. I'm going to sprint this thing. I don't care how tired I feel. And I feel like it was so odd to see this again on Sunday, among other things, including the front loading of commercials in stages one and two, that I, quite frankly, I'm not trying to rag on Fox NASCAR. It just might be the current climate of things with the way, you know, the TV contract is and the rising cost of production and all that. But good Lord, so many different like front loaded commercials that I barely got to see what happened. And maybe that's what greatly emphasized the whole fuel mileage thing for me. I'm kind of a hypocrite because when we get to the intermediates, I don't mind seeing that. Like next month for the Coke 600, I'm kind of praying that we have a fuel mileage situation because that's kind of the race where I feel like that's the exception to the whole flat out racing. It should be flat out racing, but there should be a chess match involved where crew chiefs are like, do we need to save fuel? Do we need to go aggressive on tires to leapfrog that person who's on fuel mileage? Like, that's cool to see. But at Talladega, Daytona, where it's raw speed and big packs, I don't need to see them slowing down. If I wanted to see them slowing down, you might as well call it the Goodies Dash series with V4 engines and small cars that look like, you know, not the Bandoleros, but the Allison Legacy cars. They almost look like, you know, the Xfinity cars if they were shrunk to like half their size. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see that on Sunday. So I know drivers have different opinions on it, but I don't know. I mean, unless you get rid of the stages or you lengthen the stages out or you make it shorter on purpose so that like stages one and two, you make them full out sprints. And then for the stage three, you might have to see that happen in the first half of the stage, but then in the second half, it's all like, let's get going. Let's hurry up. Let's really get ourselves in the position to win. It's absurd to me for now, let's see what happens in July at Atlanta, where I pretty much feel like it's going to be a factor again. And if it is, I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to even be more ornery about it, short of swearing, because again, this is a family show. So I don't like it. I absolutely hate it. I would be curious to hear what our fans think at home. And I know for the TPF team, the consensus was that they hated it. They didn't like it. So we're on your side, teammates. That's all I can say. Now, on the Xfinity side of things, we finally got to see a first-time winner, Talladega. Well, not finally, but it was neat to see a first-time winner. Although, really, at the end of the race of on Saturday, we had like so many potential first-time winners in the top 10. You had Parker Kligerman at the front. Jesse Love is not too far behind. You also had Haley Deegan, who was in contention. And also, too, Leland Honeyman was up there. I mean, it was an interesting situation to seeing all of these contenders up there because of the fact that the usual favorites like AJ Allmendinger, Austin Hill, they all wrecked out. They all had too much damage to be contenders. So it was kind of an edge of your seat situation where we're wondering, like, could it possibly be Parker's day at last? But unfortunately, on a restart, he got dumped. And then for Haley Deegan, she thought Riley Herbst was going to draft up with her. Nope. On the final lap, she was left hung out to dry, or she got clotheslined, and she went from fourth to 12th. And her in-car radio was not too family friendly. And in fact, she even said after the race that she may have punched the wall in her team transporter. So, oh boy. I'm glad that didn't happen during the race weekend. I interviewed her. I'm kidding, Haley. You're cool. I get it. I get frustrated too, if that were me. But for Jesse Love, he wasn't frustrated. He was a very happy young man from Menlo Park, California, because he got his first victory in the Xfinity series. And it didn't take long for him to do so with Richard Childress Racing. I kind of felt the same way about Jesse's victory, like with Tyler's victory. Even though Jesse nabbed his first victory, I wasn't surprised because all season long, he's been very strong. He could have won Daytona if he had been more patient. He could have won Atlanta if he hadn't run out of gas. And every week, he's just been up front. He's just a really good young race car driver. So for you, Brooklyn, do you feel like this is the start of something amazing for this young Californian? And as for our guest, Haley Deegan, who was trying to go for the win and finish 12th, what are your thoughts on her performance?
With Jesse Love, I absolutely feel like he is going to be one heck of a driver. I mean, he already is a driver, but I think, I mean, even more fabulous things are on the way for him. I mean, like you said, this season has been off to a great start, to understate for him. I mean, to have the even be in the talk about winning like your first race in a new series, like that's insane. I mean, and he's just kept it up every week. He is just, I don't want to say overperformed of what I expected, but I mean, he does not act like a rookie in the Xfinity series at all. So I definitely think I expect more from him. I mean, this week at Dover, I would be, as far as Haley Deegan, I would definitely probably want to punch walls too. I mean, you expect someone to do something and then they don't do it, and then you go from fourth to 12th and you're like, dang it, where's the finish I thought I had? Like, come on, dude. I mean, that's to use a really popular driver saying, I mean, that's just racing. I mean, you get the good end sometimes and you get the bad end of the draw sometimes. And I think she definitely just got the bad end of the draw at Talladega. But I mean, she's another one. I expect her to, I mean, continue learning, continue doing well. I mean, she's definitely a very phenomenal driver, so.
And she certainly making some noise for the AM racing with their full-time Xfinity efforts. I mean, I've always felt like in the truck series, because it's kind of a rough and tumble series, you really never got a chance to showcase what you could do in a car that has more horsepower, more, I don't say pliability, because that makes the car sound like it can stretch, but more maneuverability than the truck series. And I think she's been showing that from time to time. And when we get to the intermediates, she's not exactly like lost at sea. She looks at ease, really, honestly. Now she is definitely having some going to school moments, but what rookie doesn't when you're going into the Xfinity series? But you know, all in all, I feel like she's done a pretty solid job of trying to get up to speed to help this number 15 team get up, get some good finishes, get some laps out there as a rookie. And I feel like, you know, over time, and you'll hear from her about it, you know, she's really high on the program that she's with. She really believes in AM racing, what they're doing for her. And they're definitely a good fit for each other as far as trying to establish themselves as a consistent team. She's got Joe Williams top the pit box. And oh, by the way, one of the owners of the team, Kevin Sawinski, he's no slouch when it comes to racing. This guy was once a legend in the ASA ranks, American Speed Association, which if you watch those races back in the day, you know that he was quite the race car driver in the Midwest. So he recognized something in Haley to help build his team, to have the confidence to basically tell Brett Moffitt to hit the road and bring in Haley. And yeah, she's still learning the track. She's learning the cars and all of that, but you know, I'm looking at her results these last couple of weeks. She is certainly starting to showcase what she can do. She got an 18th at Martinsville with her car looking pretty beat up. I thought she was not going to even finish the race with her front end missing, but she did. And at Talladega, she got a 12th. And at Las Vegas, which you could argue as being her home track since we don't have an oval in California anymore, she did a pretty good job. She finished 15th. So she's climbed from 33rd to 24th in points. It is very tough in the Xfinity series when you're trying to learn these cars. But we're going to go to Dover, and that's kind of one of those high-speed, short tracks where I feel like she could surprise us, honestly. So we'll hear from her about her situation and more, including the fact that she had to deal with some adversity, at COTA. So if you hear a little bit of an urgency in her voice when we do the interview a little bit later, you'll know why. It's an interesting situation, to say the least, but there was a bit of a decent ending with that situation, which I'll talk about towards the end of the show. Unfortunately, I'm going to talk about the bad news that happened at Talladega with Eric Jones. As I mentioned at the top of the program, he will not be racing this weekend because he suffered a lower vertebrae fracture after a turn three crash towards the end of the Geico 500, when he was pretty much involved in an all Toyota accident in turn three that involved, among others, Bubba Wallace, Denny Hamlin, and John Hunter Nemechek. Eric Jones got the worst of it with a very bad angle into the turn three wall. Thankfully, of course, because of all the safety advancements and having the safer barrier and all the changes to the cars, he's still here with us, because quite frankly, that angle he took was reminiscent of what we saw with Dale Earnhardt in the 2001 Daytona 500, which, as we all know, unfortunately, it ended his life. But Eric was able to walk away. And in fact, he was actually checked and released from the infield care center, but then he went to a hospital in Birmingham to be reevaluated, in which around that time, they checked him out. He was released. But on Tuesday, it was announced that he suffered a lower vertebrae fracture. In that case, bring in Corey Hine, the emergency driver or the reserve driver, to sub for him in the number 43 car this weekend in the Family Dollar Petty 75th anniversary car. As I said to my team, it's a shame that we're not going to see Eric in that beautiful Richard Petty car, but we do wish the best for Eric. As for Corey, what a heck of a time to make your Cup Series debut, because, it's one thing where you're basically being, you know, you're the one going up to the Xfinity Series and they're being told, oh, by the way, or the Cup Series rather, and you're being told, oh, by the way, we need you in the legendary 43 car. You think you can handle that? And Corey obviously has shown that he can handle tough situations. Most of the time. I know people are going to bring up Phoenix, but that's besides the point. I feel like with Corey, he is a very talented driver. He's very consistent, does what he has to do, but he doesn't have the winning hand. And oftentimes, he'll surprise you with getting that car home in one piece. And not in just one piece, he gets it home with a really good finish. In the Xfinity Series, he's improved a ton. His average finishing position last year was only 24.3. And his five starts so far with Sam Hunt Racing, his average finish is up to 18.2. And he already is a top five in the top 10. So you know he's starting to get the handle of the Xfinity cars. Where in the Truck Series, his numbers are so disgustingly dynamic. It's absurd. He may not have all the victories, but his average finish is 3.9. He's too good to be in the Truck Series, in my opinion. So it's a good opportunity for this Marietta, Georgia driver to get a chance. But Brooklyn, I know you've been catching up on the news, but when you heard about what happened with Eric and when you learned that Corey was going to be the substitute driver, what can we expect from Corey? And what are your thoughts on what he may be doing in not only with Dover, but possibly for these next several weeks?
I obviously was upset for Eric. Like you said, he's not going to get to drive this week's fun scheme. And just obviously we never want to see a driver hurt. But with Corey Heim, I was very excited to see him in a cup car. Like you said, he's too good to, I definitely will 1000% back you up. He's too good to be in the Truck Series. There are a few that I want to see in cup cars, and he is probably the number one that I want to see in a cup car. So I'm excited to see what he's able to do in the 43. Obviously there's a learning curve going up to the cup and racing with the cuppers, but I think he'll rise to the occasion. I think if anybody can, it's Corey Heim.
And this is certainly going to be an interesting situation for him because Dover is not exactly the most easiest track to make your cup debut. It's often described as racing in a gymnasium with a jet fighter. And I feel like that metaphor still holds true with a next-gen car. But he has obviously shown that he can absolutely transfer over his success over from one car to another. There was a time I didn't think he'd be that great a truck driver because in his rookie season in the Truck Series, he was honestly a little bit overwhelmed. I felt like, man, are you sure you want to get to the Truck Series? But then in 2023 or last season, I know you missed one race when he was sick. I think it was during Gateway, but otherwise, he was just incredible. He got an absurd amount of top 10s in a row. Unfortunately, it came down to Phoenix, and this is where I kind of hate the one race situation, but we'll save that talk for another time. But Corey, we know he's way too good to be in the Truck Series. I feel like his experience now in the Xfinity Series is actually serving him well to, hopefully get to the Cup Series. I'll be curious to see what the strategy will be. Are they going to set up his car to be like, all right, man, we're not expecting you to win. Just bring it home in one piece. Get us a decent finish so that we're at a decent position in the owner standings and Eric doesn't have to make too much for it when he comes back. Or are they going to trust Corey enough to be like, hey, man, you're a natural talent. Just race the wheels off that thing, which may be a big ask because it's not going to be – nobody gets a lot of practice time anymore in NASCAR Cup Series racing. It's like, what, 20 minutes at best? So he's not going to get to know that car very well on Saturday. So for me, I think the realistic expectation is just finish on the lead lap, get us a top 20, top 25. And if he can do that, that's not too bad. You're going to probably be near the 42 car and maybe you'll finish on the lead lap, maybe sneak a top 15 in if you kind of bide your time. So we'll see what happens on Sunday afternoon. But we obviously want to see Eric come back into the Cup Series real soon because he's a good guy, and you heard him talk a couple weeks ago. So he's a really, really amazing individual who loves his books, does a lot for his foundation to get kids to read, and obviously his situation, it's going to be a tough road for him. But I think if anyone can certainly make a comeback, it's Erik Jones. Now let's get into the nitty gritty of our show for the Who Impressed Us the Most and our Goody's Headache Powder Award after Talladega. So this one, of course, is obviously subjective. This is just our opinion. So I'm curious to hear what Brooklyn has to say, because I know she's kind of figuring things out. I'm kind of curious because we only had the two races, the Cup and Xfinity. So this is not our typical triple header weekend. So the field narrowed down for you, my friend. I'm kind of curious to hear what you think.
I was impressed by Tyler Reddick. Kind of a basic answer, I know. But ultimately, when you look at the last lap, I mean, I was just impressed by his luck, I guess. I mean, is what it boils down to. I mean, and the help he had. I mean, it wasn't just luck. I mean, he had help. I mean, I was just impressed by his whole situation, I guess. And for who deserves the headache powder, I went back and forth between Erik Jones and Corey LaJoie. I'm going to give it to Erik Jones, though, just because he's having to sit out, you know. I mean, that can't be fun. He just deserves a headache powder after this week, I think.
And as every driver can say, when you're out and you're recovering and you see someone else in your car, that's one of the most difficult emotions and experiences you have to process, because it's, well, in the most simplest term, if you don't understand what that's all about, it's like if you're sick and someone else goes out with your partner. So for you guys, if it's a boyfriend or girlfriend and someone else takes your partner out for a date, it's like, man, I want to get out of bed even though I'm sick. I want to be the one doing that. But you're doing this for me. What the heck? It's tough. And obviously for Erik with that, his injuries, it's going to be kind of a fluid situation for him to see if he'll come back right away or they're going to sit him out for a while, because he does have a medical waiver from NASCAR. So there is that. And, you know, it's a very appropriate situation to give him the headache powder for sure. And I think Tyler Reddick pretty much impressed all of us for sure. I'm going to go a little differently for you, though, on this. And I'll say the one who impressed me the most is actually Anthony Alfredo, because he managed to get himself a podium finish on Saturday, and he backed it up with a sixth place finish on Sunday. The road to getting a sixth place finish was not that easy, because on the last lap of Sunday's race, Anthony Alfredo was running like 18th or 19th place on the inside line. Probably didn't have a chance to get a top 10 finish, even if there wasn't a crash, or if there was a crash. It takes a lot of good skills. And I'm not trying to diss on Anthony. Any driver would agree with me on this. He needed a bit of luck too. He was able to dart to the inside on the grass. He did not spin. He got the control of his car back and he crossed the stripe in six. That's a huge finish for Beard Motorsports, a team that doesn't really get to race every weekend. They're a small team with an owner from, I believe, Michigan. So I think you have to give it to Fast Pasta. He was really impressive. And in fact, I actually texted him after the race on Sunday, because I was like, man, you got through it. Congrats, dude. And Anthony was like, we definitely punched above our weight all weekend and we showed we belong. It's really important to have runs like this for our great sponsors and the new partnerships we're developing. And he couldn't have said it any better. That's huge, because Anthony Alfredo is a Center Reality race car driver who, he's not a generational driver. He's not one of those, I'm the son of an owner or a brother of a former driver or something like that. He's a kid from Connecticut who worked really hard, and he's really likable. So I'm impressed by him. I feel like the driver who could really use a headache powder actually has to be Parker Kligerman, because I am feeling so sorry for him, being so close to winning his first Xfinity Series race. He's so good at Talladega. Fortunately, we get to come back there in October. I say that fortunately because I typically hate super speedway racing, but for Xfinity, I like it because I feel like the package suits these cars better. But man, he was so close to winning the race. he was in the right position. I felt like that movie made on Austin Hill was maybe a few laps too early, but hey, you gotta do what you gotta do to win a race. But unfortunately, on the ensuing restart, he was the reason for the caution. He got spun around, and instead of winning the race, he has a torn up race car and hurt ego. But he'll be all right. He's got himself a pretty gnarly pain scheme for Saturday's race, but I don't think it'll be too long until the number 48 car is in victory lane. So for now, Parker, enjoy yourself with the enjoy your Goody's headache powder. Try not to drink it with Spike Light coolers, because that would be an interesting headache that you'll have on top of what happened at Talladega. But right now it's time to talk about Dover at last. Dover Motor Speedway, or in the good old days, Dover Downs. It's a 1 mile concrete beast in Dover, Delaware, the first state of America. So it's winning time, folks. This is when Brooklyn and I make our race picks for Saturday's NASCAR Xfinity Series Bet Rivers 200 at Dover. The defending race winner is Ryan Truex, not Ryan Truex Jr., folks. It's just Ryan Truex. And yes, he's entered into the race, so he has a good chance to defend that victory. On Sunday afternoon, the NASCAR Cup Series race, the Worth 400, has the defending race winner, Martin Truex Jr. So you know the Truex brothers are looking to defend their victory once more and make it a really happy weekend for the boys from New Jersey. Can it happen? Will Mother Nature be nice for a change? Spoiler alert, Mother Nature's going to be nice. I'm betting the bank on that. But anyways, Brooklyn, it's your turn. Make some picks, and I'll get mine.
All right. Here we go. For Xfinity, I think Austin Hill is going to go to victory lane. You can just never count Austin Hill out. For Cup, I think half of the Truex brothers are going back to victory lane. I think Martin Truex Jr. is going to go back to victory lane. You know, anytime we talk about weather quite a bit in NASCAR, and anytime we talk about weather, I'm like, Monday Martin. Monday Martin is a force to be reckoned with. Not that, I mean, I think as of right now, I'm planning on getting the race in on Sunday. But, you know, anytime the word weather gets thrown around, I'm like, okay, Martin Truex Jr., where is he? Let's keep an eye on him.
Yeah, he's probably the one guy when there's a rain delay on Sunday. He probably doesn't mind when the race is rescheduled to Monday. And he has proven he can get the job done at Dover when the race is on Monday. So he might be the only person wanting a rain dance. He's good. He's actually doing a rain dance probably right now, but the rest of us mortal folks are like, no, let's actually have a race on Sunday. Thank you very much. We don't want the rain to happen. So I like your picks. Austin Hill and Martin Truex Jr., certainly solid choices. For me, when it comes to Saturday's race, I think we have to look at somebody. He went with Richard Childress Racing. I was going to say Jesse Love, but this is a tough one, honestly. I've got to think this one over really quickly. I am going to go say Sam Mayer wins on Saturday afternoon. He obviously had some momentum on his side when he went to Talladega after winning Texas, but unfortunately that all got evaporated when he wrecked early in the race. But I do think that he'll come back to Dover and showcase that Junior Motorsports knows how to get their concrete program in the wraps to get to victory lane. Now, as far as Sunday's race is concerned, this is a tough one because I would normally say Kyle Larson because he's so good at these tracks. And I have to see what the tire package is for Dover. So let me go really quickly here and see. We don't have any notes about the Dover tire package. Wonderful. So I'm just going to go on a wild limb and think, are we possibly going to see excessive tire wear again? Because if we do, oh man, I'm going to have to say this. Denny Hamlin. I might have to pick him for Sunday's race.
When you throw tire wear in there, It's kind of like the Monday Martin thing. When you say the words tire wear, you're like, okay, where's the 11? Denny, where are you at?
And I mean, I'm just, yeah, he's the master at it. I'll give my hand, I'll raise my hand up right now and just say, yep, we're not worthy. he just knows how to conserve tires. I will tip the man on that. So tip my cap to the man on that. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what the tire package is. I will say the 5 will be a factor for sure if he knows how to save his tires and not burn them. And the pit crew avoids some mistakes and hopefully no crazy pre-race concerns, because at Talladega, they kind of angered NASCAR with an unapproved adjustment to the roof rail on Saturday afternoon, and they didn't get to qualify. As if that wasn't enough, NASCAR on Sunday was like, yeah, no dog, you don't get to even start 36. You're going to start 36, go to pit road, serve a drive-through penalty. If you go a lap down, that's on you, buddy. He pretty much had his hands tied to his back, but he was actually in position to salvage a decent top 15 until he got wrecked and got 21st. So I'd say between, I'm going to go Danny Hamlin and say he beats out Kyle Larson by not by much. So here you go. It's a Toyota victory lane for us, I suppose, for Sunday's race, but we're thinking Chevrolets for the Xfinity race. But what do you folks at home think? Why don't you hit us up on our socials, whether X, Instagram, Facebook, even Threads. Yeah, Threads. At the Podium Finish, let us know who your picks are. If you happen to get the 2 race-winning picks, I'll send you an in-stock diecast 2024 164 scale diecast car from spoilerdiecast.com. So hit us up, folks. It's almost the end of April, and it's going to be May real soon. Not me. It's going to be May. I'm not Justin Timberlake. Anyways, folks, our next guest is not Justin Timberlake. Our next guest is Haley Deegan, who will be in the hot seat right now. Here in the hot seat, live literally from Circuit of the Americas for the Focus Health 250 race weekend. And as you can tell, it's kind of chaotic over here, but it's all good because we got Haley for the first time on the Podium Finish. So before we get started, Haley, how are you doing today?
Doing good, a little stressful, but what wouldn't it be at the racetrack for sure? It's exactly. Typical race weekend. Sometimes you have some issues here and there. So we got a lot of the problems figured out, which is good. So I'm glad we got it for the race.
Exactly. I mean, it's stressful now, but it's better happening now versus like lap 3 of the race.
Exactly. I'm a lot more comfortable with getting the issues figured out before the race. So when you know you can go into the race and have a good shot at it, you feel a lot better.
Oh, for sure. Now, let me ask you, it's your freshman season in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. How are you feeling about going into the second highest division in NASCAR and taking what you've learned from ARCA and Truck Series racing?
Yeah, I mean, it's been great working with the team. They're all really good guys over here. They've treated me great. We have great relationships, and I think just being in the Xfinity Series is a little surreal. Even after Daytona, like, I ended up in a wreck at Daytona, one of the early wrecks, about 20-some-odd laps in. And just watching it, I love watching the Xfinity Series. It was, like, all the years I was in trucks, like, the Xfinity Series is always, like, that is so cool. And just to be a part of it, it's unreal.
Now, compared to the racing that we had in the Truck Series where it's rough and tumble, how would you say the racing variety is here in the Xfinity Series?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Truck Series, because of these spec motors and stuff, it causes the racing to be super, super tight. And I think because of that, it could cause a little bit more roughness in it. But in the Xfinity Series, I mean, I don't think it's been that bad. I think it's been pretty good. I feel like it's quite a few older drivers in the series. So there's a lot. I feel like respect goes a long way in it. And I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit cleaner.
For sure. And that's good to hear that the race is a little cleaner, because I know a lot of the complaints last year in the Truck Series were, oh, everyone keeps wrecking each other, where it seems like at least you got a chance to, like, make a good battle for 20th or top 15 finishes.
Yeah, I mean, it's... There will always be stuff that happens on the track. I mean, there's been a few wrecks that I've got caught up in that happen, and it's inevitable. That's just racing.
For sure. Now, let me ask you this. When you race in the ARCA Series, of course, you got that big win in the West Coast, and, you know, people got to know your name. So when you go through the tough moments in the Truck Series, and now you get this chance with AM Racing, how much of this is like a, okay, folks, I'm going to show you folks why you believed in me all these years ago?
Yeah, I mean... It's hard because every time you move up, it gets harder. And so you're always going to have those challenges. But I think just having your goals, having what you want to accomplish listed out and just checking them off slowly but surely. That's what I'm trying to do.
For sure. Now, I know a lot of young women out there look up to you because of the fact that you've done so much for women in racing. And obviously, this being Women's History Month, as of right now, I mean, what's it like to be a catalyst for young girls out there who want to be a driver or a mechanic or an engineer?
Yeah, it's super cool, especially having young girls come up to me saying that, oh, or the dads come up to me and say, hey, I got my daughter in a race because of you, seeing that it was possible. It goes a long way. It's really motivating for me because I feel like trying to be a good example to young girls, trying to show them, like, hey, something like this is possible.
For sure. Is there a particular story from that type of thing that stands out to you in terms of, like, oh, this fan stands out to me, or this young girl that met me, now she's a race car driver?
I mean, there's been quite a few. I actually, back in the day when I raced off-road trucks, the kart that I raced, there was this little girl that we were at the same go-kart track quite a bit, and I try to help her out here and there, and then she ended up buying my off-road truck off me when I sold it, and then she started racing, so that was something that I thought was pretty cool.
That's really neat. I bet you it's like a big sister moment for you.
Yeah, stuff like that's cool, and I have quite a few girls that are in go-karting or a lot of different types of racing. Legend cars, bandoleros come up to me, and I always try to give as much information as I can. They have questions, answer their questions, stuff like that, because I feel like it goes a long way.
That's really awesome to hear. Then you're making a really good impact already for people, and that's why we want to have you as a story here on TPF. Now let me ask you this as well. You're establishing your own legacy with your family in racing, with your dad being such a great extreme racer, does nitrocross racing. You know, what's it like to branch out and say, you know what, I'm going to do stock car racing?
Yeah, I mean, my dad, he accomplished so much. He was in off-road racing, rally car racing, and supercross, motocross, freestyle motocross. He did so many different things. I think one of the things that he wanted to do but didn't get the opportunity to was on the NASCAR side of things. He's raced a late model a few times, stuff like that. And I think it's just cool because I think our family has covered almost every aspect of racing now with me being on the NASCAR side of things, besides, I would say, drag racing.
Is there a part of you that wants to do some amateur racing?
Probably not.
Fair enough. We don't want you to get hurt in that.
I mean, I don't know. It's not my forte, I don't think.
That's fair enough. Now, you got a really neat-looking car for this weekend at COTA with Cody Jinx on the car. So talk me through about that partnership and what it's like to have him on the car.
Yeah, my team owner, Wade, is pretty good friends with him. And so that relationship kind of got started from there. So they previously knew of each other. And I think when my team owner approached him about the deal, and he's actually a fan of kind of like my whole family. And before this deal even was kind of finalized and everything, I'd helped him meet my little brother because he had gone to one of the Supercross races, and he's a big fan of my little brother, and so is his son. And so that was something that was pretty cool, and I think just it's cool partnerships when everyone supports each other.
That's awesome, and I hope that this car is offered in Lionel Racing. Have you ever collected your own diecast cars?
I mean, I always get some already just because they're like my diecast stuff, so I get sent them. I keep them all. I don't get rid of them.
That's awesome. Is it kind of humbling when you see that when you're getting autographs, like with these fans out here looking at you and they're like probably waiting for this guy to get done with you and get an autograph from you?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I've been around it for so long because of my dad. So it's kind of become like a normal for me just because my family's been around it so much and everything my dad's accomplished when I was younger. I couldn't even go walk around the mall with my dad without stopping like every 10 feet, so it's been kind of normal for me.
That's awesome. I got a couple more questions before you get ready for the race. Now, if you were stuck on a deserted island for the rest of your life, of course your fiance could probably be there with you.
Yeah, okay.
What songs would you want to listen to for the rest of your life?
What songs? Is it specific or like a genre?
Anything.
I guess if I had to stick to one genre, it'd be 80s rock.
80s rock? Like the hair stuff?
I'd say anything of like a Motley Crue, Metallica, stuff like that. I grew up on that stuff. Like Hair Nation, 39, Channel 39, CD6. I listen to that every day going to school because my dad, that's what he loved. So.
We're not even family, but I feel like you could be like my little sister because I love this.
Yeah, I mean, I like old music.
Now for my last question for you, and we hope to have you on in the Pony Finish many more times, aside from like your family, who would you assemble to be on your dream team, like three drivers, and they could be anyone alive or past?
I mean, I'd probably pick Chase, my fiance, because he's a damn good racer. Back when we used to race against each other back in the K&N days, he's really good on dirt. I feel like he always beat me in the K&N. So back in the day, there's not many times where I beat him. I think I out-qualified him like once, and so I still bring that up, but he definitely would be on that team of mine.
That's fair, and that's not a kiss-up point for her. She really loves her fiancé, so just letting you know. Now, is there anything you want to say to the fans or any shout-outs?
I mean, we're going to have some fun here at COTA. Hopefully, we can make it to the end and get a solid finish.
Awesome. That was Haley Deegan here in the hot seat on the podium finish. Click that like and subscribe button, folks, because Haley's going to say so. All right. Thanks, everybody.
And that was Haley Deegan in the hot seat, the driver of the number 15 Airbox Ford Mustang Dark Horse entry fielded by AM Racing. My thanks, of course, goes to Haley Deegan for making that interview possible. I'm very happy to finally get a chance to interview her. And the article edition will be out later this week. And also, too, I would be remiss if I don't thank my new good buddy in the Xfinity series, and he's certainly somebody I enjoy getting to talk to at COTA, to Marcus Morgan, really solid fellow and a great guy. So thank you to Marcus for making that interview possible. It was so fun to do it literally moments before the race happened. And if you heard cars in the background, that was the truck race that was happening. So much was going on at COTA. And as I keep telling Brooklyn, even though it's now been a month, I'm still trying to recapture my energy that I had at COTA because a piece of me is still at the racetrack. So hopefully when I get to Indianapolis later this year, I am a little bit more re-energized. But that was a fun interview, and there's many more from COTA we still haven't aired yet, so stay tuned for that. But for closing thoughts for this week, my only thing I can think of is, well, it's Dover. It's going to be a fun race weekend. I can't wait to see what Josh Jones, Jenny Lingle, and Daniel Rankin get for us in terms of photos. For me, it's almost time to thinking about Darlington and throwbacks. So my closing thought is, I don't care what the rest of the throwbacks look like. Kyle Larson's wins by not even miles. He wins the entire thing, in my opinion. And that's considering the fact I grew up a huge Jeff Gordon fan. And when I saw the Rainbow Warrior car come back in 2018 with William Byron, I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. The fact that Terry Labonte's Kellogg's car from 1996 is going to be in a number 5 next gen car, it's just so neat. I know it doesn't say Kellogg's on it, but it is so awesome that we're paying tribute to the Iceman, Texas Terry Labonte. I feel like people forgot about him for a while because he wasn't as flashy as his younger brother, Bobby. He was the quiet one. Although I've gotten to, as you know, folks, he talked a lot for like 33 minutes with me. So he's not so quiet after all, huh? But no, it's so cool to see Kyle throwing it back to Texas Terry as a Texan. Well, Texan by move, but a Texan nevertheless. I love it. It wins. I don't care if we have like a Days of Thunder paint scheme or a Dale Earnhardt paint scheme or a Jeff Gordon paint scheme, which we'll probably see. Who knows? But this is so cool. The month of May, if you follow what Larson does, is going to be exciting. Because we start off at Kansas, then we get to Darlington, where you know he could probably win. Then it's the All-Star race weekend. He won that race, but he is also qualifying for the Indy 500. And then Memorial Day weekend happens. We get to see if, number one, does he make the race? And if he does, can he make the Hendrick 1100 happen with a victory at Indianapolis and a nightcap victory at Charlotte? So a fun time for Young Money Nation, to say the least. So that's my closing thoughts. What about you, Brooklyn?
I can't decide if I'm want to do the rain dance just to make things interesting or not hope for the rain, you know? I'm tempted to just, you know, keep things on schedule, you know, not hope for the rain. I mean, if you're a Truex fan, I mean, we can obviously always hope for rain. Rain shows up plenty and on Sundays for whatever reason. It feels like rain follows the NASCAR garage. So I'm sure there will be plenty of Monday races. Dover is just a super interesting track. I mean, it's just very distinct. And I always enjoy it. I mean, I feel like there are some good schemes this weekend. I'm just ready to see who shows up and who shows out.
And speaking of great schemes, I forgot to mention that Parker Kligerman has a Motley Crue paint scheme. So if you like that kind of music, you're in for a ride with that car, because it's a very interesting wrap on the number 48. So maybe Parker was a little bit grungy after Talladega and he decided to tell Scott Borchetta, bro, I just need my car to reflect my attitude. No, that wasn't the case. They're obviously promoting a record with a band that now is working with Dick Machine Records. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure Jenny's not looking forward to a Monday race because she's been telling me all week. She's our photographer, by the way, Jenny May Lingle. She's like, Rob, don't jinx it. I don't want any rain. I can only stay till Sunday. I'm like, don't worry. It's going to be sunny. It's almost going to be 80s. And the forecast right now is actually trending in that direction. Sunny and close to 80s. So maybe I do new things. I am Karnak, like in the Johnny Carson edition of The Tonight Show. We'll see. And if you know that reference, folks, then you know your late night shows. If you don't, I'm afraid that's an old reference that you have to look up on Google. With that, folks, I do think it's a wonderful time to put a bow on our show. So for Brooklyn Jackson and Haley Deegan, I'm Rob Tiongson saying thanks very much for joining us on episode 114 of TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. Catch our previous 113 episodes on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And tune in next week for episode 115, our post-over pre-Kansas edition of our show. It's sort of a home track for Brooklyn, although she won't be there at the track. She'll be there in spirit, and we'll hopefully see another crazy finish this coming Sunday at Kansas. And we'll see, maybe the turntables will turn, if you will, between Kyle Larson and Denny Hamlin at Kansas. But until then, folks, let's all go get that checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everybody.